few years ago, I signed up for a mailing list, which actually turned out to be one of the best value mailing lists I belong to. It's one of my favourite mailing lists of all. It's called the Wise Women Mailing List. It's a community where the members are not like the ones that... I'm so hopeless with names, like someone was talking about this morning. But in fact, on this particular mailing list, members are helpful, positive, and supportive. It's a fantastic community, and all the members actually really enjoy that aspect of it. But the key point is that that list was set up and is moderated by Dori Smith. You don't actually see the moderation. Nothing ever seems to happen, and in fact, on one occasion last year, something was bubbling along, and I emailed Dori privately and said, I wonder if you should step in, but she didn't. She held back, and it all sorted itself out within the hour, really. So anyway, so Dori runs that list, and that's how I first came across Dori. I'm very embarrassed to say that I've never had time to learn JavaScript, but in fact, I'm realising that perhaps I should. In 1993, Dori and Tom Negrino wrote the fifth edition of the JavaScript Visual Quick Start Guide. They've also published books on Dreamweaver. Oh, sorry.
I was going to say
2003. I'm impressing myself. Oh, well, goodness. Okay, I've got... Yes, speaks to how tired I am. My apologies. So in 2003, the fifth edition. They've also published books on Dreamweaver, Java, wireless networking, and Macintosh dashboard widgets. I'm also well aware that Dori's involved with the WASP...
Web Standards Project.
Thank you, which I neglected to put in my introduction notes. However, Dori is currently working on a new book or a new edition of her book called JavaScript and Ajax for the Web, which Amazon tells me will be available at the end of July. So today Dori's going to tell us... When I was chatting with Dori the other day, she was talking about how much JavaScript has changed from the old days and that now it's entirely different. So today Dori's actually going to be talking to us about the modern JavaScript and how we can incorporate it into our websites while still creating accessible sites. Thank you, Dori.
Thank you.
First off, I should probably start off by asking how many people, try and get a level of the geekiness of this so I know quite where to pitch things, because I can make it code heavy or just best practices, generalities. How many people here have messed with JavaScript? Most people, okay. How many people here have messed a lot with JavaScript? Excellent, my people. As Maroz was saying, Tom and I are currently working on the sixth edition of our JavaScript book, and it's been a very successful book. And when it came time to work on this edition, I went to Tom and to our editor and said, I want to rewrite everything. I want to just go through it and rip stuff out and put a bunch of new stuff in. And they said, but it's been working so well. And I said, yeah, but a lot has changed in the last 3 years. And not just my perspective, things in general have changed. Previous to 93, we had been updating our book every 18 months, which is about a fairly reasonable cycle when you think about how often browsers came out at that point. The first edition we did came out in 97. So 97, 99, 2001, 2003. What motivated this new edition coming was a number of things. One of the was Ajax. Hey, it's hot, so gotta strike while we can. Another is IE7 is finally shipping. It's in public beta now. There's this huge mass of people who live and die with IE6, but things are getting better with IE7. Please, please. That's what they tell me. Some of it is that JavaScript is becoming more professional in general. People are finally realizing that it is a real programming language and treating it as such. It used to be this little toy language that designers messed with. They'd go to websites copy something, drop it in their pages, and they wouldn't know what it did, and they wouldn't even really want to learn what it did. They just kind of trust on faith that it would work. And so designers weren't learning it, and real programmers, quote unquote, didn't think it was worth their time. So it got kind of a bad rep. But it's finally getting some recognition as not just a real programming language, but as a worthwhile programming language for people to learn. I was at South by Southwest, a major web conference in the US, a couple months ago, and I was on a panel on Ajax. And I made a comment about how JavaScript is, it's a nice little programming language. It's a real language. And a guy came up to me afterwards and said, I want to object to something you said. And I said, what? And he said, you said JavaScript was a nice little programming language. I said, yeah. And he said, it's not little. And I said, okay, I'll give you that one. I'll stop saying it's little, so I'm not saying that now. But I have taught a lot of programming classes over the years, and I still think that JavaScript is one of the best ways for getting non-programmers to learn something about programming. To a certain extent, I guess it could be kind of thought of as a gateway drug. Because you have somebody who's a complete designer, and then they learn how to do a little bit of programming, and then they, oh, I can do that, I can do this. So, Miraz, you're going to get hooked. I know you are. So a certain amount of the new professionalism that's coming along has come up with this theory called unobtrusive scripting. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. And a certain amount of this is lessons that I have learned also working on the next edition of our JavaScript book. Anybody here have a copy of the fifth edition or previous editions? Well, that one perk, bless you. If you own a previous edition and there are any changes you'd like to see in a future edition, I mean, tell us, to anybody you know who might own a copy, this is the time to let me know, because right now everybody has been warned that anything can be thrown out at any time, anything can be radically modified at any time, so let me know. But I've learned a lot of lessons in just in the parts of the book that I've gotten to so far, and right now my editor and co-author hate me, but the book's going to be covering unobtrusive scripting pretty thoroughly. So, what is it that I'm talking about? To a certain extent, it's the flavor of the month. It's, you know, this current buzzword. And that's not an inaccurate description, but it's also a good thing, too. For a while there, web standards that's a trendy thing. But we've learned that web standards is a good thing, even if it was trendy at one point. Accessibility, trendy at one point, but God, it's the right thing to do. I think unobtrusive scripting is falling into that. It's the right thing. And it's kind of faddish, but hey, that doesn't mean it's bad. Another way of putting it. Except I don't think it's the month or the week. I think it's going to be long-term the right way to go. But all in all, it's really just a better way to do things. And so what is it? In the same way that CSS separated out content and appearance, unobtrusive scripting is about separating out the behavior from the structure. Your HTML page should have your content. Your CSS file should have how things appear, or multiple CSS files, maybe one for print and one for screen. And then when you pull all your JavaScript out, what's left on the HTML page is just structure and content, and all the behavior is separate. One of the things that unobtrusive scripting isn't is DHTML. I was kind of disappointed in the last talk to hear him talking about DHTML. I hate the letters DHTML. I mean, I know who did it, who came up with it, and I hate the phrase. And one of the main reasons that I hate the phrase, and I think it's just horribly named, is because people get confused about what DHTML is. I've seen too many people say, well, I've learned HTML and I've learned CSS and I don't want to learn JavaScript because that's too much like programming, so I'll learn DHTML. Well, that's what it is. So it's just, it's a bad name. And people say to me, well, nobody gets that confused anymore. Here's an example. You probably can't really see that. So let me make that a little larger. I'm not getting the edge there. Ooh. It says there, this is from MySpace. MySpace, one of the biggest sites on the web. You may enter HTML, DHTML, or CSS in any text field, but JavaScript is not allowed. When did I take this screenshot? This week. It says this right now. So clearly, people are confused about what DHTML is, because even people who ought to know what they're doing, some HTML person put this on the site. And then a lot of people, I mean, there's a lot of people on MySpace. How many people here have never looked at MySpace? God, you're lucky. It's the ugliest thing. It's ugly, but it is just huge among certain crowds. Certain crowds being anybody under 25, as far as I can figure out. And they're seeing, anytime you go in and edit your own stuff, and they seem to edit their stuff all the time, they're seeing HTML and DHTML and CSS here, JavaScript there. So yes, there's confusion. There's no question that there's confusion. So let's stop saying DHTML, please, because there's better ways of putting it. And it's not working. The other thing that unobtrusive scripting isn't is old-style JavaScript. And this is an example from our book, and my God, this is like the most boring buttons ever, but you got to start off simple when you're teaching beginning programming. But this is your classic rollover button. Because this is like the hello world of JavaScript. You got to show people, because there's an immense number of people who just want to learn how to do rollovers and nothing else. So you got to give the people, what they want. There's a billion different ways to do rollovers. This is the way that our book teaches it, whether, yours may be different. Or this is the way previous editions of our book have done it. I know of at least one book that liked it so much they picked it up word for word and put it in their book. Yeah. Just found this out recently. It was kind of interesting. It's in our book in a section called More Effective Rollovers. It's in a section in their book called More Effective Rollovers. The difference is that our book is in chapter 4 and their book is in chapter 14, which makes me wonder, what were they doing for 13 chapters? If you get to that, anyway. This is one way. Basically, what you're doing is just checking to see, does this browser support images? If it does, let's create some new images. Button 1 in red, button 2, 1 in blue, button 2 in red, button 2 in blue, and here's your source files where you're setting up the actual images so that they're preloaded. And there's your red button 1, blue button 1, red button 2, blue button 2. If your browser doesn't support images because, Netscape 2 didn't, then we got to set some dummy stuff so that those poor Netscape 2 users don't get errors. And then we do that. And then you have to have the end hiding script because there were certain browsers that would say, oh, I don't understand the script tag, but I'll just dump everything from it out on the screen. when was the last time any of these people actually ever hit your site? But that's the traditional way to do JavaScript. And then down, you know, here, there's your mess of HTML and JavaScript all, you know, jumbled together. It's your simple, you know, Ahref, but there's your on mouse over and your on mouse out in there. And then, you know, your image tag and your end A, and oh, look, here's another one. All, you know, very thrilling and kind of jumbled up together. That's the old style. That's obtrusive JavaScript, because you look at this page and 90% of this is script, even though it's an HTML page. So let's get rid of that. So this is how we're now recommending that you do this sort of thing. Here's the HTML file. Hey, look, there's your link and your image, and another link and another image. And there's no event handlers, no on mouse overs, no on mouse out. And the script tag in there, all it does is says, call this script here. That's it. This is an HTML page. It's a clean HTML page. There's no ungodly amount of stuff. It's not going to throw off, you know, when the Googlebot comes to your site, it's not going to spend all this time looking at JavaScript. It's going to go straight to the meat of your page. If your browser doesn't support external JavaScript files, that's fine. Just not going to get there. So let's actually look. Here's that external JavaScript file. And all it says is, when the page loads, let's initialize some rollovers by calling the rollover init function. Oh, look, here's rollover init. Then we're looping through and getting every image on the page. Just looping through it. Boom, 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 boom. If the parent of that image, what's around that image, is an A tag, if it's an Ahref, if it's a link, then, well, if you've got an image inside a link, there's a good chance that's a rollover. So we call setup rollover and pass it the image. So here's setup rollover, new function. We add a couple of properties onto image itself. Image is already built into the browser, but we can add on to it. So we set up two new things, the out image, which is the version when you're off of it, and the over image, which is the image when we're on top of it. It goes along with on mouse out and on mouse over. We have out image and over image. It's a new image. And we set it source because you gotta set up the source for it for later. That's how the rollover actually happens. And we tell it, when somebody does an on mouse out, when somebody leaves this image, trigger the rollout function. Here's the over version, again, new image. This one we have to calculate, so we know just you gotta come up with some kind of rule. So in this case, I know it's gonna be in the images folder. I'm doing it based on the ID. ID is going to be unique. That way I know the image name is unique. If I keep some kind of relationship between the two, my life is simple. I'm a big fan of, you know, keeping things simple. Underscore on.gif. So it's just, it's the on version of this image. I can have this source be pretty much anything I want. I just use this particular scheme. And putting this in here preloads the image. So then it's, when the rollover actually happens, it will happen quickly. Doesn't have to pause. And I set up the on mouse over event handler to call a function called rollover. And so that's what happens when the page first loads. And it loops through. No matter how many buttons I have on the screen, in my window, it will do it for each one of them. When the onMouseOver happens, the rollover function gets triggered, and it just sets this dot source, which is this current image that triggered it, and it sets this dot source to this dot over image dot source. Boom, there's the over image. On the rollout, it sets it to this dot out image. And this is the entire script. It's just, yes. Some people prefer using CSS for this. Some people prefer using JavaScript. I personally think that for interactivity, I think that JavaScript is a better place for it. I think CSS is for how things look. I think that JavaScript is for what things do. It's doing something. Yeah, it's not because the user has to make an action. The user has to take an action.
You could, for instance, have the two images stored in different CSS classes, but the JavaScript are you taking classes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But on the other hand, then, you have a lot of presentational stuff then dumped into your HTML page. Because if you've got to load it, or in your CSS.
Yeah, you have it in your CSS.
And why?
I don't know. That's CSS for.
I mean, but, okay, let me just get back to this. The difference is, because this is going to apply to CSS as well, when you add a new button to the old version, it was one line of HTML, 7 lines of JavaScript for every button you added to the page, and you had to remember to add the event handlers to the link. This one, on the other hand, if you add a new button to the new version, you have 1 line of HTML and 0 lines of JavaScript. Whereas with the method you folks are talking about, you have to go in and touch the CSS files because you got to add this new stuff. Well, why? I mean, I'm a big believer. Somebody told me that the best programmers are lazy, so they figure out ways to let other things do their work for them. I'm a big fan of, hey, 1 line of HTML and 0 lines of JavaScript and no more CSS. That works for me. Yes?
Can you just go back to the source code?
Yeah. Yes?
I'm just curious, what happens with a screen reader with this?
It depends on how well the screen reader understands JavaScript.
Oh, we'll put it another way. Which version of screen reader would support it?
I have been told, and I do not own all. I do not actually own any screen readers, so I don't know. But what I've been told is that screen readers tend to work best if you just turn JavaScript off.
Yeah.
So
what I'm mainly concerned is that most screen readers that I'm familiar with will actually read that as two links.
Right, they are two links.
So you then have, but effectively, they're two links going to the same destination.
No. They go to there are two different pages.
Oh, right.
This is, remember there were two buttons up there? There were links going to two different, these are plain boring links.
Oh, okay. So you're only going to get a single alt for each screen reader.
Excuse me?
You get a single alt for each screen reader.
Right. Which is as it should be.
Oh, absolutely.
It's, well, it's my opinion.
Can I be really
picky? Sure.
If that single source is actually sent as with an XHTML content type, then the JavaScript button works. The tag name would be in lowercase.
I'm sorry, what? Then the JavaScript?
The JavaScript button work, because the value of the tag name will then be in lowercase.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Me too. Yeah. You've got capital A on the JavaScript source. And the other part of it.
I've got a typo somewhere?
No, if you look in the JavaScript example,
okay. I've got a capital A because that's what the browsers need.
But not if it's actually sent as application slash XHTML instead of text HTML. I said it was very picky.
Yeah. I don't know anybody who actually does that for general purpose sites.
Yeah.
You know, that is still a more theoretical thing, and the chances that they're buying a book on beginning JavaScript is slim. You know, there's a lot. As I understand it, it is perfectly valid to send XHTML transitional as HTML. It is not invalid to do that. So, but anyway, what it does return is a capital A. You could always just, you know, force it to be uppercase, and then it would apply in general.
Yeah.
Or force it to lowercase. Same thing. Yes. You and a whole lot of other people.
But, can you do this so that this would be the same if you did on focus, if you use the tab? If you're a blind user and you're tabbing for a website as opposed to using the mouse, so you don't have all the mouse out, you could have on focus.
You could, I suppose you could, I don't know why not. But on the other hand, for blind users tabbing to it, I don't know why they would need to see, you know, a change.
I was going to say the on focus on blur thing works really well for pop-up menus.
Oh, I'm just saying, this is just, you know, for rollovers. And
yeah.
This is, I'm trying to generalize from this to the bigger picture. So, did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. So why do it in JavaScript? Well, really, it's because JavaScript can go through, and then whatever's in HTML, JavaScript will just handle it. You don't have to go in and touch your CSS. You don't have to change anything for different pages on your site. It will just work.
In the beginning, getting kind of that previous.
Excuse me?
In the beginning, getting kind of that previous butchery is not going to go, I'll just use CSS instead.
Right. So, big picture, I think I just talked about it. One of the issues that I've really run into is multi-person work groups, where you have these people who want to work in HTML, or they want to work with your WYSIWYG design tools. I like Dreamweaver enough that I wrote a book on it, and the book's doing rather well. So I'm not going to say visual tools bad, but there are some people who like to code in text editors, and there are some people who just like to design. And when you separate out the two, each group gets to do what they do best. So instead of having multiple people all touching the same page, you can separate them out much more. You also end up with pages that all call the same external file. And that way, well, there's a number of things. Visitors save time because you only load the JavaScript files once. It's one external file. If they go to 20 different pages on your site, there's one hit once, even though every page might call that file. Developers save time, on the other hand, in a lot of different ways. You're not going in, oh my, you have all this JavaScript on every page. Somebody comes down and says, you will add a new button. Oh my God, I have to go through, add the new button to each page. I have to add the new JavaScript to every page, make sure I didn't miss any, make sure that I add those event handlers on the image, blah, blah, blah. We've all done this. This is why I love HTML built through SSIs and JavaScript in external files. I change one thing, boom. Debugging is great because you change it once, you debug it once, and then it should just work throughout your site. Less hits to your server instead of loading up that big mass of stuff on every page. It's much slimmer. It's much easier to add new functionality because if you want to add something to your one external JavaScript file, you add it there and it's suddenly everywhere. You're not adding into your schedule, you know, it's going to take this much time to code and this much time to test and then that much time to add it to every single page on the site. So here's an example of adding new functionality. Somebody says, hey, you know, that two-state rollover was nice, but I want it to change to a third color when somebody actually clicks on it. With the previous example, it would have been, you know, going in and adding an on-click handler, you know, event handler to every single link on the page. God, no, that's just wrong. So, all I've added in this case is we had the out image and the over image before. I'm now adding another one, click image. I set the source to be, you know, again, images, this image.id underscore click.gif. Pretty straightforward. An onClick I call rollClick. Add the function rollClick. It does the same thing as the others. It sets this.source to this.clickImage.source. And boom, throughout the entire site, all of a sudden you now have three state images as long as that image actually is does exist in your images directory. That's going to take somebody a lot longer than adding this much code. Question back there? Yes?
In the top stuff. It's here, it's these three lines here, plus this function.
Isn't it also change back to the rollout when you mouse off? You put the changes and you mouse out and it changes back to the out.
It changes back to the out, yeah. But that may be what you want. I mean, I've seen plenty of that. And that took five lines of JavaScript, and then it's immediately everywhere. As opposed to doing it through CSS, which would mean you would need to add for the in your CSS file a click handler for every single button on an entire site, whereas this will be much more general and doesn't need to be button or image specific. So, getting from here to there, rule number one is just don't put JavaScript in the HTML file. You want the script tag in the head, and then that's it. Or maybe multiple scripts in the head. But depending on what you want to do. But get the JavaScript out of the HTML pages. This is the same thing you heard for years and years about styles, so you've heard this before. It's just JavaScript.
Is this a general rule or just for not having JavaScript to edit in all the files?
No JavaScript in the HTML file. You know, no document.writes. Document.writes is evil. There's better ways to do it. There's just more stable things that are just better going forward.
Well, what I'm talking about is probably like validations for forms.
You can put validate. There's no reason why form validation can't be in an external file, and it's better in an external file. Again, you have it applied to the events or to the fields on the page when the page loads.
Do you have a JavaScript file?
Oh, yeah. You know, name your name the fields on the page intelligently, and then you can just have JavaScript loop through those form fields and say, okay, this has these classes, therefore I know I need to do these things with these IDs. And it can just build the type of validation it needs on the fly for that page. And then if later on, if you go and add more form fields, your JavaScript is still good. Or you had a whole, if you have a whole other page, you had a whole new different type of form, the external JavaScript will do it. So far, you know, I've heard a lot of that, but there always seems to be some, there's plenty of people say, but in my case it makes sense. And usually, pretty much there's a simpler way to do it once you take a step back. And especially not even event handlers, because people think, oh, event handlers, they're just attributes. And yeah, they are just attributes, but really the attributes, the event handlers don't need to be in the HTML page. Yes?
What about unload?
Window.unload, you saw it was in the external file. I don't have enough time today to talk about window.unload because every script I do starts off with set window.unload to do this, and you end up with multiple things that it needs to do, and there are ways to stack unload window unload handlers, but that's way beyond the scope of this talk. So, working with older browsers. You saw there's a huge amount of stuff in that old-style JavaScript that was all just there to hold the hand of older browsers. You can still put that in the new stuff. I'm just going to say, please test for objects, not for browsers. There's a huge amount of code that is going to have to change because people check for browsers. NIE7 means they're going to have to go in and change all of them. And while it may be full employment for designers and developers in some ways, it's boring. So check for objects instead. Check for, you know, document.getElementById, and it'll just keep working or whatever. So especially not just browser checks, but version checks and platform checks. Check to see if it actually will support what it is you're trying to accomplish. God, I thought this one was going to run short. I can get into the whole thing. Graceful degradation used to be the phrase du jour, where if you code for the best and then you have stuff degrade gracefully for older or less capable browsers. Nowadays, what is being recommended is start off with your baseline and then add onto that the functionality that you want to add. It's a different way of thinking about it, but that's referred to as progressive enhancement. And that way, older browsers are supported. Browsers with no and limited JavaScript, you know, really, make sure your site works without JavaScript. I love JavaScript. JavaScript has been very good to me. But you can't make your site depend on it. I've seen too many horror stories. Bad idea. It's just always a bad idea. Make sure your site works fine without JavaScript. JavaScript should add functionality. It shouldn't be required. Make sure your site works with limited JavaScript. People with PDAs, people with various types of browsers may have some JavaScript, but not absolutely everything. Make sure it works. And make the scripts add functionality instead of being required functionality. That's pretty much what I just said. Accessibility isn't something to add on afterwards. Start off planning to make it accessible and then add the function. This is what I was talking about with progressive enhancement. Start off with accessible and then add your stuff onto it. A couple more buzzwords just so that I can, if you know anybody's playing buzzword bingo, I check this off. DOM scripting is instead of going through and putting a name to every image on the page and having your scripts know about every single named image on the page, have it go through the DOM, the document object model, and go and find these things out for itself. That's referred to as DOM scripting. It's a better way to do it because you have much more flexibility. Anybody here not heard of AJAX? Good. I don't have to talk about it. The big debate in some quarters is whether or not AJAX, A-J-A-X, should all be capitalized or just a capital A. Except Jesse James Garrett wants it with just a capital A. And, you know, so, like I said, it's a big argument.
I have a question about
yes.
AJAX. So how does AJAX fit with accessibility and people using screen readers and so on?
At South by Southwest on the AJAX panel I was on, I was the official contrarian. where other people were talking about how wonderful Ajax was and how you could do so many cool things, and I was the one saying, and these are all the problems with Ajax. Ajax is a tool, and like with any tool, it can be used for good or for evil. And basically, with Ajax, like with any JavaScript, use it to add functionality, don't make it required. There's a lot of people saying, ooh, we can do new cool stuff, so I'm gonna make the site, it's all new cool stuff. You know, it's nice that they're doing new cool stuff, and I can't say it's not nice and new and cool, but be aware that there are people who cannot take advantage of your new, you know, flashing lights thingy, and it's just, if you're building a site completely to impress your buddies and sell to Yahoo, maybe you don't care about accessibility because your goal is just to sell your site off to, you know, somebody who's buying stuff. But if you're actually in it for the long term and you care about happy customers, accessibility, you'll want it. It's not just a good idea. It's really what you should do. Yes?
So in your experience, is there any way to enhance the user experience for someone who's vision impaired, for example, by using a rich application with Ajax? Like, is there some way to explain to them the rich process that's going on so that they can benefit from it?
I am not one of the hardcore accessibility people. You probably really need to talk to them about what they've seen, because when I'm looking at the stuff, I'm more looking at the script side of it than getting into the accessibility features. So, sorry.
I am a hardcore accessibility
type.
Okay, see? But if I just pick up just for that, Darren, because I was going to try and mention yesterday. The question that Darren was asked yesterday was, I think, relating to expanding forms. Is that the issue that someone was asking about?
Refreshing page.
We've been trying to do for a bank some interesting work that related to forms, you know, where you can hide a bit of a form, and if you click yes, it expands, and if you click no, it doesn't expand. You with me? Do you want to sell your house? Yes. Then what house do you want to sell? No. Do you want to sell your wife or whatever? What we found, and it is a big problem, what we found, and I'm not going to say this is an actual fact, but we have tested with a range of screen readers, with a range of blind users. We haven't come across a situation, regardless of what technology you use, where there have been situations when people needed information that they didn't get, okay? What you did get were situations where you didn't need the information, but you did get it. So what's happening is we're saying that if someone clicks the right the content, so that it's meaningful, still meaningful if you click no. So, do you want to sell your house? Click no. The next question should be something like, which house do you want to sell, rather than what's your address, or what's the address of the house? Because it's meaningful for someone to click yes and you get a question to say, what's the address of the house? It's not really terribly meaningful if someone says, no, I don't want to sell my house, I'm much more interested in selling my kids or whatever, to all of a sudden say, what's the address of your house? Do you get what I mean? So we've never actually come across one where stuff you had to get to use the form disappeared, but stuff you didn't have to get sometimes did. And the other question about refreshing is that, yes, there is a real tendency when pages refresh to go back to the top, but screen readers, in inverted commas, use sort of kind of cache, okay? In inverted commas. So they kind of cache what's there on the page. And so what they're going to have to do is, when you refresh a page, they think, oops, change, we'll put that stuff on the top again, and so they'll give it to you again. And so in those sort of situations, you try and build in something, you know, let's go down to the bottom. Sorry to jump into that. Sorry.
Okay. It's all good stuff. More people need to be asking questions about accessibility, so complain. Okay, so getting from here to there, you don't have to do it all overnight. Nobody's, you know, there's no unobtrusive JavaScript police coming by and saying, you must do this by the end of 2006. Start small, just try pulling stuff out. Keep updating your site as you add new stuff, put it in an external file. As you touch stuff, move it into an external file. you know, the goal is 100%, but it doesn't have to happen overnight. But you moved to CSS, you got rid of your font tags, so this is similar, you can do the same thing. There is the DOM scripting task force of the Web Standards Project. I am honored to be the co-leader of it along with Jeremy Keith. And you can see more about us at domscripting.webstandards.org. If you have questions about the stuff, there's some good information there. Okay, I don't want to hold you up from getting your lunch, but yes. Stick around a bit for questions.
I sometimes find myself wanting to add arbitrary attributes to HTML structure, just to sort of tag it without necessarily having the DOM scripting go and investigate the CSS class or whatever to figure out what the hell it is. I want to pass some information through from an HTML element to this script.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you stand on that? I'm actually not very aware of what the debates, if there are any, about that are. But, you know, like, if you just have, like, an A, href, and then my attribute 1 equals, you know, don't add this to your controller.
My personal preference is I tend to use class equals, and then you can add 10, 12, 20 classes to anything. And then I just have some things that parse through the classes looking for stuff. Some people like rel, but as to just making my own attributes, some people like that, but then I can't validate my pages, which it's one of the joys of being on the Web Standards Project Steering Committee is that people who don't like what we're doing will come through and validate your pages, and if they don't validate, they say, ha ha, we don't have to listen to anything you said. which doesn't make any sense, but because of that, I have to be cleaner than your average person does. So that's
do you think maybe W3C should add some attributes people could use, but
I could do an entire session on things I think the W3C ought to do. I'm not always a huge fan of their process. But then I don't really know anybody who is.
With setting event handlers like that, do you have problems with Internet Explorer's garbage connection leaks?
Could I, in fact, interrupt you on this one? I'm sorry. Dory, are you happy at all to stay on and answer some questions individually? Okay.
Lungs are still lunch when I get out. Let's say between geeks and food. Bad idea.
One of my personal pet peeves is when a program kind of slips and the previous session had its moment, and so we're just a couple of minutes running late. So I would like to point out that, in fact, it is lunchtime now, but before you all run out of the room, a couple of other things. First of all, I'd like to thank Dory very much. Thank you.